Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, welcome to the Eric Erickson Show. So excited to be joining you this lovely morning. This is Chris Burns. If you want to be a part of the conversation, the phone lines are open. The number is 877-97-ERIC. That's 877-973-7425. Thankful for Eric letting me fill in today and just pausing and taking a moment because I know he shares this regularly, but every quarter he and his wife go through a very difficult time of where his wife gets scanned. She has a very rare form of cancer. They're going through that today to see that the cancer is still in check. And so it's just a very difficult day. So just if you have a moment to pause at some point this morning during the day and just send up a prayer for their family, I know that would mean a lot to Eric. Because just knowing that there's people around him. I know a lot of you already do that, but if you could take a moment and do that, I know that would be a special thing for him. But I'm excited that I get to join you because there's so much to talk about right now. The first thing I want to dig into here is just this very interesting situation that I don't know that we've ever seen anything like this before, with Mike Bloomberg coming in and truly revolutionizing, changing the scope of this election for Democrats. The charge being leveled at Bloomberg right now, and there's a lot to break down here, but the charge being leveled by many people, maybe put most succinctly by Bernie Sanders, who's of course leading in the polls right now, is that Bloomberg is just trying to buy the election. He's another billionaire coming along trying to buy the presidency. And my question to you is this: can you buy the presidency? Is it something that money can grab? That's the charge being leveled by Bernie, certainly. You hear undertones of that from Elizabeth Warren. There's this idea that in some way it's A, a negative thing, and B, that Bloomberg's doing it, and C, that it's possible. Is any of that true? What does history actually tell us about this? Here's the context. Bloomberg just qualified for the Nevada debate because the latest national poll put him at 19%. That crosses the threshold to qualify for the debate. Interestingly, up until earlier, a few weeks ago, the Democratic National Committee said you had to have at least one delegate also. That was part of the requirements to be in the debates. But they dropped that requirement. Why? Well, because Mike Bloomberg has an entirely different strategy. He hasn't gone after what everyone else has done. He hasn't tried to make a big name by going and being part of the debates leading up till now. He hasn't been in one debate up until this point. He hasn't put any money into a ground game. He ignored entirely Iowa and New Hampshire and didn't worry about getting any sort of delegates from those states because his entire focus has been Super Tuesday. And from the outset, he has said, I'm going after Trump. He's made it clear what I'm going to do is go after Trump, that my adversary is Trump. He's almost ignored up until recently the other candidates on the Democratic field saying, no, it's me versus Trump. And the uniqueness is he's the ninth wealthiest person in the world. Let that sink in for a second. He's the ninth wealthiest person in the world. Michael Bloomberg. So he has self-funded his campaign. He spent over $385 million already of his own money. That's outspending the entire rest of the field combined. And that's why you can't turn on your radio station. Your kids can't watch YouTube. You can't turn on the TV. You can't watch the Super Bowl without seeing a Mike Bloomberg ad. Is that working? Well, a month ago, the exact same poll had him nationally at 4%. As of yesterday, nationally at 19%. There's a lot of other things going on here. Candidates have dropped out of the race, right? Think the landscape has changed. So you see people that may have been fans of, for instance, an Andrew Yang or something going, okay, I'm going to turn towards Bloomberg, whatever. There's movement in that direction. But there's no doubt there's movement in general because name recognition has gotten out because the man has been marketing like crazy. Now, the primary answer I've seen to this question of can someone buy the presidency is a resounding no. And the reason that they say no is because of the last election. And they say, look, it might seem like you can buy the presidency, but just look at the last election. Trump only spent half of what Hillary spent. I think there's a fatal flaw in this thinking. Let me give you the thinking and then tell you why I think it's absolutely wrong. Okay, so when there was an article written in CNBC, I love referring to articles written like 2 or 3 months ago, because when you do this, you get the basic philosophy that people, what are people walking into this thinking? And now we have the advantage of hindsight to look back and say, was that philosophy right? Is it true? Now, we don't know this yet, because Bloomberg certainly hasn't won the presidency, hasn't won the nomination. He's not even first in terms of the nomination. He's well behind Bernie in terms of national polling right now, but he's gaining quickly. Okay, and I would posit this to you. Maybe you don't believe he can buy the presidency. Could he spend enough to get the nomination, though? And I think those are different questions, but let's look at this for a minute. The article is by Jake Novak. He says, Mike Bloomberg is about to find out you can't buy the presidential election. This was written November 26th of 2019. So a few months ago, he said, Mike Bloomberg is one of the richest men in the world, but he's about to learn a priceless lesson. You can't buy the American presidency. Okay, and why is it? Recent history tells us Bloomberg's money can only get him so far, and the rest of what a candidate needs to win the White House is something money can't buy. It's important to remember that President Donald Trump's 2016 win came despite the fact that he spent only about half of what Hillary Clinton dished out in the last presidential election. All right, and I'll skip down one more time. The key ingredient to winning any election, according to this author, is being persuasive enough to ignite passionate support among a core group of voters that carries all the way to election day. So in other words, money's important, right? There's no doubt about that. He talks about this in the article. Money matters. But in the end, what really matters is you have to be persuasive enough, winsome enough, interesting enough in front of these crowds, in front of the debates to actually carry through to the election where people are actually excited about you. And he makes a fine point in the sense that when it comes down to it, when you have two people on the debate stage, one Republican, one Democrat, and that's where we're going, there's a lot of power in the strength of that person's oratorical ability, their likability, et cetera. Okay, but there's a few holes in this. And I want to look at one other article that says something similar to this. Investopedia, I just looked up, what does it cost to become president? How much does it cost? Some interesting takeaways here. The cost of campaigning to be elected president has risen steadily between 2000 and 2012. This will blow your mind. In that 12-year period, campaign spending by the candidates more than quadrupled between 2000 and 2012. And then an interesting fact they put is this. Usually, the candidate who spends the most money wins. However, that did not prove true during the 2016 elections when the runner-up, candidate Hillary Clinton, spent $768 million, nearly twice as much as the eventual winner, Republican candidate Donald Trump, who spent $450 million. And so in both these articles, what they point to, first article, CNBC says, recent history has proven. That's a dangerous thing to say. One example, 2016 is what he means in that case. Give me another example. Give me more than one example. Because actually, as Investopedia says, usually the candidate who spends the most money wins. But that wasn't the case in 2016 because Trump spent less money. And it's the same thing the CNBC guy said. Well, Trump spent less money. But I think we're missing something critical here. The point of spending the money. What was the point for any of these candidates in spending the money? What has Bloomberg spent the vast majority of his money on so far? Ads, being seen, being in the media. Friends, did Donald Trump get as much media coverage as Hillary Clinton? Yeah, he was in the media every single day. The top news story every single day from basically when he began campaigning until now, you can't go to the front page of any newspaper and not see an article about Trump. You can't turn on CNN or Fox News or MSNBC or CNBC or anybody else and not see coverage about Trump from the moment he started campaigning. So we say, well, he didn't spend as much. Did he need to spend as much? He needed the coverage. It's not just spending to buy widgets. It's not just spending like, hey, I got more posters or you have my name up on more billboards. It's spending to get media coverage so that you are constantly being looked at, so that people can't escape you. Whether they like you or they hate you, they can't get away from you. That's the point of the spending. So it's a massive logical fallacy to sit here and go, well, recent history proves that the candidate who spends the most money isn't necessarily the one who's going to win. No, recent history proves that Trump was smart enough to get himself in front of the media constantly. And if you can't do that by force of personality, there is another way to do it, and that's by spending money. And here's a second issue. Right. The second issue that's brought up in the CNBC article, which I won't even read this part, is basically Bloomberg's not that exciting. That if you look at him in front of people, he's not a great speaker. He's just not as engaging as a candidate. Trump's able to get up, rile up a crowd, get people excited. People are going to be passionate about him. We already know this. We've watched him on the campaign trail. Bloomberg doesn't have that. But here's my response to that. We live in an entirely different age. Bloomberg doesn't have to be exciting to spend insane amounts of money that make him appear exciting. Right? The ads, it's not like Bloomberg, it's not like the ads are him monologuing for 5 minutes, or the ads are him getting up and actually talking about issues. The ads are created by very well-paid genius marketers with incredible music behind them, like previews to a great movie, and it makes him look great. And how many people are watching the Democratic debates? Okay, think for a minute. We won't even actually talk about the numbers. You tell me, are more people seeing Mike Bloomberg ads or actually watching him in the debate coming up? Are there going to be more people sitting live watching Bloomberg sit and debate, however well he does, or are there going to be more people who are going to see the ads that he's plastered on every single media platform? Obviously, far more people are seeing the ads he's putting out. Now, that might not fly when it comes to the general election. Because in the general election, A, you're going to have a higher viewership of the debates. B, you're going to have a higher viewership because Trump is there and Trump draws the media like they can't avoid it. It's just like a magnet. There's a magnetism. We have to have coverage constantly of this. And so at that point, Bloomberg's ability to be strong, to respond, to give a good debate answer, to be funny, to be interesting, to stand up to Trump is going to come at him hard because that's what Trump does. That's all going to play into it. But up until that point, do we really think that Bloomberg's performance on the debate stage is going to overshadow his ability to outspend his opponents by millions and millions of dollars? It's worth thinking about. And just saying that, well, recent history has proven that who spends the most money. No, actually, the course of history has shown usually the person that spends the most money wins. It just happens that in 2016, Trump didn't need to. If you're going to be on the front page of the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, featured on CNN and Fox News virtually every day, that's the best kind of advertising. It's scot-free. Hillary needed all the money she could get because she wasn't that interesting of a candidate. Let's just be honest for a second. She wasn't engaging. She wasn't someone on the debate stage that was inspiring. Trump was able to be those things, and then he also spent a whole lot of money. But he was in front of the media for free every single day. So don't give me recent history proves. No, recent history doesn't prove anything. Trump was a totally left field out there candidate that came in and was able to get media coverage in a way no one had gotten it before. And perhaps he understood in a way that people are just starting to understand the reality that the game board has shifted here. Bloomberg has the money to make compelling ads, and he's spending it in an insane way. And we've seen him go up in the polls just in the last few weeks to become nationally one of the front runners. Tell me that doesn't have a lot of power. And tell me that's not going to influence his possibilities of winning the Democratic nomination. Hey, welcome back to the Eric Erickson Show. This is Chris Burns filling in for Eric. Can you buy a presidential election? That is the question. That's the charge leveled against Michael Bloomberg. Now, I don't care if you like Bloomberg or Bernie or anybody else. It's fascinating. Because, A, we know Trump is going to be the Republican nominee. It was almost laughable to see in the lead up so far in Iowa and Nevada any sort of response for other candidates. Trump cleaned house, obviously. He's the incumbent. He's going to be there. We know that's going to happen. The real question is, who is going to be the primary contender? And Bloomberg has consistently increased in the polls. And now you have Bernie, interestingly enough. Whereas when Bloomberg came in, he very much employed a strategy. And obviously, whether this works or not, we're going to find out. A totally different strategy, like we just mentioned. He didn't want to primarily worry about, I'm going to get a ground game in Iowa. I'm going to ground game in New Hampshire. We're going to go after those votes. No, he said, I'm going to focus on Super Tuesday. I'm going to focus on what's coming up, and I'm going to spend an insane amount of money to make a massive showing when the real delegates are coming in, and I'm going to win. And I'm going to make it about Trump, right? Everything he did initially was all about Trump. All his ads were about Trump. He acted like the rest of the Democratic field didn't exist. Well, Bernie now striking back recently on Twitter and basically saying, look, this is another person just trying to buy an election. And then things got kind of nasty. Bloomberg puts out an ad, and it was a pretty powerful ad going after Bernie and the Bernie bros and saying basically that the Bernie bros are harassing folks, or harassing Bloomberg, or harassing other candidates, and that they're just as bad as the worst of Trump supporters that you hear Democrats complain about. That's what the Bernie bros are. And then Bernie sends out another tweet showing a picture of President Trump hanging out with Mike Bloomberg. And so it's going back and forth. So now you see this back and forth happening because you can see that Bloomberg is trying to be the primary foil at this point to Bernie, that Bernie is the leading progressive, that he is moving very much in a different direction. He's leading more of the radical wing of the Democrat Party, which has expanded dramatically and become more and more influential, regardless of whether that actually reflects the sentiments of most Americans, or even the sentiments of most Democrats, or certainly the sentiments of most independents. And so I think if Bernie wins the nomination, he's going to have a very hard, tough, uphill battle in terms of convincing even the moderate side of his own party, and certainly independents, that he's the one to go for. There's something attached to, a stigma attached to, calling yourself a democratic socialist that many, many, many Americans, even Democrats, go, I can't handle that. I didn't go fight in a war for that. Certainly my parents and grandparents didn't fight for that. I'm not bringing that. That's not what I want. Regardless of what he means by that, which is a whole different discussion. It's very interesting to know what's going to happen if Bernie becomes a nominee. How many Americans are really going to get behind this? Of course, young people are going to get behind this because Bernie is very good when you see him actually live. If you ever watch him speak, not in a debate scenario, but if you watch him speak in front of a big crowd of people, he comes off as a professor. He comes off as knowledgeable and likable and thoughtful and caring and all these things. And you see this army of young people that love him. And yet I think most people over the age of 35 or so are sitting and going, socialism, we can't get over that. We don't want that. We don't want to see, how are we going to pay for this? We've talked about it before. Bernie's economy, he's not really willing to get into specifics about how we're going to pay for the trillions of dollars needed to enact his policies. But this wasn't primarily an intent to go after Bernie. It was more a discussion of, can you buy the presidency? That was the core question. So Bernie now coming after Bloomberg, Bloomberg being now the primary, it seems like, putting himself or trying to put himself in the position of being the primary opposition. And I think, again, it's just a very dangerous that this idea that people keep throwing out that says, well, in the last election shows us that's not reality. No, the last election just shows us that Trump had an unbelievable ability to tower over the media. And that's never changed. You can't watch one show where Trump is not probably the leading topic, whether it's a Republican focused show or a Democrat liberal leaning show. He's still going to be the primary topic at play. That's a win for him. That's the whole point of advertising. Whether it's good or bad coverage, he's the one being covered. Bloomberg has thrust himself into a similar position just by spending the money to do it. And he has the money to do it, friends. It's not like he's hurting his net worth dramatically right now, and he's already outspent everybody else. So what's going to happen? Nobody knows. But I tell you what, I think saying that, well, just because this hasn't been the case in the last election means he's not going to be the candidate is a very, very dangerous methodology. And the real question is going to come down to this. And I wonder what you think about this. I would love your thoughts on it. You can call in the show. It's 877-97-ERIC. Phone lines are open, 877-973-7425. Who would you rather have as the nominee at this point? Would you rather have someone like Bloomberg, who is got a lot of money to spend, who comes across a lot more moderate, who happens to have said, and this is kind of ironic, happens to have been a Republican, actually spoke at the Republican National Convention in 2004 supporting George W. Bush? Or do you want Trump? I'm sorry, do you want someone like Bernie? I mean, who do you want to go against? Someone like Bernie, who's uniting the more liberal wing of the party, and yet it's doubtful he's going to get that independent support as much as someone like Bloomberg might be able to. There's a lot of questions at play here, but there's no doubt that it's a sea change, and we've never seen a primary quite like it. What's going to happen? I don't know, but I think that downplaying Bloomberg's ability to really make a national play at this is probably a faulty way of thinking, and Trump's campaign is already getting ready for it. Hey, welcome back. This was interesting. So just to make my point here one more time, okay? Total number of viewers for the last two Democratic debates. Total number of viewers. We had between 7 and 8 million for both debates. Okay, a little bit lower two debates ago, about 7.3. Last debate right before New Hampshire, about 7.8, almost 7.9 million viewers. So 7 to 8 million viewers. That's fair, okay. How many folks watched, I don't know, the Super Bowl? Or Mike Bloomberg had an ad featured? That would be 102 million viewers. So you tell me what's more powerful, being able to get up and give a great one-liner at a Democratic debate with 7.5 million viewers, or having a really well-crafted ad that goes out that 102 million people watch? Because, oh, by the way, the main reason they're watching is for the ads. Why do you watch Super Bowl? Okay, I know a lot of you watch Super Bowl because you love the game. The Falcons aren't in it. I don't particularly give a rip about the game, but I want to watch the ads, right? I want to watch the ads. 102 million people. It's the only time people want to watch commercials ever. No one ever wants to watch commercials. We want to watch Super Bowl commercials. I throw my political ad on. That means 102 million people are watching that versus 7.5 million. You get my point. Can you buy the election? I don't know about that, but man, you can make a dent, again, as the latest national polling has found. So we'll see what happens. But 102 million views, okay. hard to even fathom. I think we downplay the reality that marketing is changed so dramatically from what it used to be, that now people, when you can't, literally, when I can't, my son is watching YouTube and a Bloomberg ad pops up and my son's talking about it. That's just never existed before. So trying to take old stereotypes of what is it that helps you win an election and superimpose that in a day and age it's entirely different is probably a dangerous thing to do. All right, let's move on. The number one news story out right now that we keep seeing, that keeps changing, is the coronavirus, right? We see it's been around now for a number of weeks. We haven't known the full impact of the virus. We haven't really understood what it's going to do. We've seen the markets go up. We've seen the markets go down. All sorts of uncertainty related to this, and then Apple just jumped in the game and made a change to the whole landscape of this yesterday. So I want to talk about that. If you want to join the show, it's 877-97-ERIC. That's 877-973-7425. If you want to talk about, again, just what's going on with the coronavirus, if you're feeling anxiety, if you're feeling fear, not that you're going to be infected with the virus, but that you're sitting here going, I don't know what it's going to do to the markets, I understand why you feel that way. Because we've gotten so many mixed reports about what is actually going on. Okay? And the latest thing we've seen is very conflicting reports. So there's two different articles out this morning that give you a very different picture. One is from the New York Times, which is giving live updates. So coronavirus live updates, over 150 million Chinese are under coronavirus lockdown. More than 10% of the country's population faces restrictions on leaving their homes. It's pretty remarkable, right? And in fact, it's saying the new virus, the coronavirus, is now considered deadlier than the virus that causes the flu. A few weeks ago, we were all talking about, hey, look, there's not that many deaths, and the death rate is incredibly low. And if you look at the flu, it can cause up to 500,000 deaths per year. I mean, it's incredibly powerful. And now new research saying this could be deadlier than the flu. And the hard part about all this is that most of the data we are getting is from the Chinese. And we honestly don't know how reliable some of that data is. It's very hard to know what actual death rates are. It's very hard to know the actual increase in sicknesses. And so something that encouraged the markets recently was that Chinese markets, the Chinese market specifically, which were closed for the Lunar New Year, which came back and everybody expected them just to tank horrifically. Well, they did go down, but they've now recovered and they're actually back above where they were before that. And if you're looking just from a 30,000 foot view, you kind of go, okay, everything's going to be okay. I mean, if Chinese markets are recovering fairly well and global markets are looking pretty good, then we can have a positive outlook here. And China has said that in the Wall Street Journal this morning. China touts fall in new coronavirus infections and deaths. China just came out saying there's a drop in the number of new infections, which, of course, would be a wonderful thing. On Tuesday, China's National Health Commission reported that 1,886 new confirmed coronavirus cases in China on Monday, the first time the daily tally has fallen below 2,000 since the beginning of the month. So positive signs out of China. Everybody yesterday, if you talked with people about this yesterday, was feeling kind of positive because globally we saw stocks rising, we saw Chinese stocks rising, and we have this report saying, hey, it's actually falling numbers, it's working, we're seeing some containment, and everybody's excited until the end of the day. Here, when Apple comes out and says, actually, we may have a problem. Apple comes out and says, we're going to have to adjust our earnings expectations, our revenue expectations, because of problems in China with our ability to get the different pieces, the parts that make up the iPhone and different Apple products. And here's the deal. The majority of electronics, and if not your actual computer or your actual TV that sits at your house, certainly that which makes up those things, the chips and the various hardware, most of that's made in China. China is the number one exporter of tech, either actual full-on tech products or the pieces that make them in the world. And so the underlying fear here that people have been talking about is not necessarily, I mean, you hear people discuss this is going to be a global pandemic, et cetera. But the deeper fear people have about a long-term market impact is not so much the immediacy of what's happening right now as how long will this disrupt the supply chain for massive tech companies? And Apple, the first one to come out saying, well, this could be a pretty big deal. And then, of course, all of the folks that our Apple suppliers are seeing their stocks drop because Apple comes out saying there's going to be a problem. So we just saw the market open this morning. We don't know where it's going to go today, but we know that it opened down, right? The market as we sit right now, the Dow is down by 0.3%. The S&P is down 0.2%. The NASDAQ's down 0.2%. All of that primarily a reaction to Apple's announcement that, hey, we're going to have an issue. So what is the actual issue? Well, the issue is simply this, that if our supply chain is based out of China and factories have to be closed there right now and workers can't go back to those factories and we don't know how long that's going to last, that's going to impact our revenue. And it's not just going to impact us, it's going to impact a broad sweep of people not only working with Apple and companies not only working with Apple, but other companies, technology companies that rely on China for their supply chain. And this has been kind of the underlying question. And here's the problem. We have no idea how long it will take for these factories to get back up and running. And it's not something we can just snap our fingers here. Now, Apple has an insane amount of liquidity. Right. Apple has a whole lot of money in reserves. And so can they continue on and stay strong as a company? Sure. They may see a stock drop, et cetera, but they can continue on. But a lot of companies, the question is, how long can they continue on if their business is disrupted here? That's the question. And nobody has a good answer for that. And so then this just becomes a macro version of what we experience in our everyday lives on a personal level, which is that we have uncertainty. We just don't know. We don't know what's going to happen. This could be a blip on the radar where, you know what, things are moving in a healthier direction. China's figuring this out. We're going to see factories reopen. It's going to be a short-term issue, and everything will be back to business as normal. Or it could be a much bigger issue that is the first domino to topple. And you know what we do as humans? We rush to one of those extremes as quickly as possible because, doggone it, do we feel uncomfortable in the tension. We don't want to live in that tension. The tension says, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if all these companies are going to recover. I don't know if factories stay closed, if what has led the market growth in the last few years, which is primarily tech stocks, are we going to see those deeply suffer because of this? And if that happens, how's it going to impact the broader market? Is this the first domino to fall? And so you see all sorts of people out there going doom and gloom, and what is going to happen? You know, it's apocalyptic. And then on the flip side, there's a whole lot of people going, there's nothing to worry about. Look, China's already starting to contain this. Overall, there's positive movement. It hasn't really impacted global markets in a powerful way yet. There's just no cause for concern. Keep going up. Business is normal. And both of those are deeply unhealthy responses to this. You know why? Because they're comfortable, they're safe, and they're not reality. And how often do you and I find ourselves in this position? Where we don't want to look at reality because reality is tense. Reality is uncomfortable. And so how are you handling this as you look at your 401k? Because in the end, that's what this filters down to. It filters down to how you're going to respond. Forget what Apple does. Forget what tech companies do because no one knows what's going to happen. No one has any clue how long this is going to last. No one knows how much it's going to disrupt the tech sector. So what do you do about it? Do you go out today and sell a bunch of tech stock if that's what you own? Do you go rebalance your 401k away from that sector because that's what you need to do? Because you have anxiety about it? Or do you say, this is the perfect time to buy on a dip? Let's jump in. We're going to just buy. Now is the time to buy these companies because they're lower. It's a brief short-term drop. It's all going to come roaring back. Here's the reality. Nobody knows. Nobody knows. So what are you going to do about it? And this is where the rubber meets the road. And this is why, by the way, I am so passionate, and I can't help but talk about finance because that's just what I do, right? I'm so passionate about talking to people about investing not being something that's this sexy enterprise. It's not winning the lottery. It's not going out and finding that one stock that's going to blow up and be amazing because uncertainty is constant and regular, and it's going to keep pounding at you no matter what you do. Nobody knows what's going to happen. So just like we don't know what's going to happen here, we didn't know a few weeks ago it was going to happen with Iran. Was it going to turn into World War III? We didn't know a few weeks before that. Was a phase one trade deal with China going to get done, or were consumer products going to explode in cost? You can just keep going. Every few weeks, something is coming up that's making us go, we don't feel comfortable. We feel a deep level of uncertainty. What do we do about that? And often the easiest thing to do is to pick an extreme. We either go, you know what, I'm going to run to safety here. I'm going to get out of this. And then that can sometimes be terrible for us because what if things actually, what if we see markets rally dramatically because of a change in the situation and you missed out on it? And now you're kicking yourself and going, I can't believe I did that. Or on the flip side, we go, everything's going to be fine. I'm going to buy on the dip. And then the dip turns into a recession. And you were smart enough to buy right into it and see everything drop. Right? Because nobody knows. And this is the challenge we constantly face as we're investors. The news cycle will always bring up all sorts of uncertainty. That is how they get their ratings. They will constantly bring this up. And the problem is this, if we're going to be honest, if we're going to be intellectually honest here, we have to sit and go, the reality is any one of these things that's happened, I just pointed out three of them, right? What's going on right now with the coronavirus, a few weeks ago with Iran and the question of geopolitical turmoil and World War III and all these things, and then a few weeks before that, are we going to get trade deals done? All three of those things, I could point to articles written that said this is going to be the thing that topples everything. All three of those things, we could point to people that said it's not a big deal, don't worry about it at all. And the reason for that is because we're sitting on the longest period of economic growth ever. We're sitting on the longest bull market ever. We're sitting on some of the best unemployment numbers ever. And so we're at the point now where everyone's just waiting for the shoe to drop. Everyone's waiting for the floor to fall out. A recession must be coming at some point, of course, at some point. And so this is the thing. This is going to be what's it. And so every single time something comes up that's serious, you're going to see a whole lot of people treat it as if this is the impending storm. And that is so dangerous for the way that you go about investing, because in this case, we can look back and go, well, the last two weren't. In fact, if I had gone to safety in the last two, that would have put me in a very bad position. So the answer for this is not going, how can I be reactive? What can I do? How can I get myself out of tech stocks, for instance? The answer is getting off that treadmill entirely. I'll tell you about that in just a moment. Welcome back to the Eric Erickson Show. The number, if you want to be on the show, 877-97-ERIC. That's 877-973-7425. This is Chris Burns filling in for Eric this morning. What do you do, again, when there's just deep uncertainty and you have to deal with the reality that there are no easy answers here? There is no crystal ball that's going to tell us what happens. There's plenty of articles out there. There's plenty of financial pundits. There's plenty of op-ed pieces that would tell you exactly what they think is going to happen. And guess what? They're all educated guesses. And I promise you, I can find articles from across the spectrum, from very intelligent people with incredible sounding, you know, letters behind their names, telling you exactly what they think is going to happen. And here's the other thing I can promise you. They can't all be right. They just can't, right? They can all give you their opinions, and all their opinions mean about nothing, because nobody knows what the next piece of information is going to be. That's just the reality of the market, and that's why it's so very important that in this specific situation, right, when watch how this is unfolded. This virus comes out. We don't know how serious it is. It's spreading very quickly. We have conflicting reports of how deadly it is, how quickly it's spreading. Is there movement from China that's changing it? And then you have the reality that China is the largest exporter of tech goods in the world. And so it's hurting supply chains. And Apple just comes out and says our revenue expectations have to change because of the coronavirus. And that now ripples to all of these other companies that are reliant upon Apple and making things for Apple, because now they're stock is dropping. And so every day we see the market going up and down based on what? Based on the unknown, the uncertainty created here. And that finally ripples down to your 401k. You have nothing to do with how to respond to this virus. You have no insider knowledge of what's actually going on in China. You don't know the financials for Apple and other companies and how they're going to respond and how they're strategically going to handle this. You have no clue. All you know is I have a 401k. Part of it's invested in tech stuff, and I'm seeing this drop. Or I have fear that it's going to drop. Because, again, FANG stocks, technology stocks, were one of the primary drivers of growth over the last few years. So one response to that is to go, then I'm just going to rush to safety. Another response is to go, I'm just going to go after it because, man, this is probably a blip on the radar and I could really get good growth if I buy on a dip. But unfortunately, neither of those actually gets to the root of the issue, because every few weeks, something is going to come up that's going to cause instability in the markets. And it's so easy to react to that. But if you do that, then all you'll ever be doing is reacting. You'll be on a hamster wheel, constantly running and going, oh, I got to shift this way. I've got to pivot that way because I don't know what's going to happen. Just like I have no idea what's going to happen with the coronavirus in 2 days or in 5 hours, let alone in 2 days. I don't know if the market's going to end up today. It started down, but maybe it's going to turn around today. I have no clue. So the answer is setting a strategy that's not about the coronavirus. And it's not about the president's tariffs. It's not about forecasting. Have you ever taken a meteorology class? When I was in college, I don't know why, but I took a meteorology class. I thought it'd be interesting. Let me just say there's a reason I'm not a meteorologist. Okay. But one thing I very much learned in that class was that there's a high degree of uncertainty, right? Now, I could have learned that just by watching meteorologists over the years. There's not going to be any snow. Oh, wow, it's snowing. The rain is only 30% chance. Well, I guess I guess that 30% was strong because it's raining like crazy. Or it's definitely going to be a rain. It's definitely going to be terrible weather. And I go outside and it's beautiful and sunshiny right now. No offense to my friends who are meteorologists. That's great. But they're trying to forecast something that has just built into it things that there's no way they could predict. There's a reality to weather that the unpredictable can happen no matter how good our quote-unquote forecasting tools are, and that is the case in the market. So unless you want to live on this treadmill forever, what's the alternative? The alternative is going, forget it. What's the risk I can take regardless of what happens? What's the risk I can take? And if we're sitting in the midst of the best bull market in history, there's no better time than for you to sit down with somebody you trust, a financial planner, and go, hey, look, I need to understand based on my proximity to retirement, how much risk can I take? Because I'm tired of anxiety. I'm tired of worrying the next big thing that comes along is going to throw me. So let me figure out a plan that sets my risk based on my situation, not based on anything else going on, not based on this week, the flavor of the week for uncertainty in the market, which is what happens to be the coronavirus right now, but based on my proximity to retirement so that I can relax and know that no matter what it is that has the market dropping in 2 weeks, in 3 weeks, in 5 weeks, I've already made a plan to deal with that. Now I have peace. Now I have certainty. And it may not be as sexy as being reactive and always trying to get the next play, but my friends, it actually works. Get off the treadmill.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.